Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, joined by Richard Justice, and the Houston Astros have done it. Their first World Series title in franchise history. 56 seasons, Richard, and they get it done in Game 7. Let's listen to how it happened.
You can kiss that one goodbye! Springer homers for the fourth straight game!
Attack them early, get something to hit, and don't miss. You know, our guys were able to get to them today.
And that is lined and caught by Correa. Throws to second to double off Forsythe. Throws to first, and the Astros are 2017 World Series champions.
Ground ball to me. I threw the first, and I think this is the happiest moment in my life in baseball.
All right, so the 5-1 victory for the Astros over the Dodgers. And Richard, the key right from the beginning, stop me if you heard this before, George Springer gets it done. You got the leadoff double off Yu Darvish, and later knocked Darvish out of the game in the second inning with the two-run home run.
The highest compliment you can give a guy is when he was on the disabled list a couple of years ago, A.J. Hinch told him, no, you put on the uniform and you come in this dugout and I want you yelling at me, I want you yelling at them, all the things you do. And that's what George Springer means to them. And so he got him going again. He had a great World Series. He hit his moment. You know, but you had a feeling with this team led the majors in runs.
Yeah.
And one of the things A.J. Hinch has said is I could turn the lineup card upside down and get the same production. It was going to be somebody. That's the way the whole season has gone. There was never dead spots in the offensive production.
Well, you said they feed off Springer's energy. They also feed off his music. I understand he had the 80s mixtape going in the clubhouse before the game. The guys are pretty loose, and right. I think and that revealed itself.
Yeah, after every victory, he's the guy. You walk in the clubhouse, and there's smoke, and there's everything. You go, what happened? The first time you're in there, you go, wait, what happened? Was there an accident? And he goes, yeah, there was an accident named George Springer. But that's part of it. Like, and I think Joe Maddon emphasizes this, Terry Francona emphasizes this. He said, when you win, you better enjoy it. Because you have enough tough days, and you got to ride the highs and ride the lows. But when you have a good night, have fun with it.
Well, talk about riding highs and lows. I mean, it would have been hard to imagine George Springer would walk away from this thing as the World Series MVP after Game 1. He was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. Yeah. Had really been struggling, you know, throughout October to that point. And then from there on, I mean, he just turns it up a notch. And, you know, you go back, his next 24 at-bats after Game 1, he had 17 hard-hit balls, more hard-hit balls than anybody, and that's 95-mile-an-hour plus exit velocity, more than anybody else in this World Series. So kid made a huge adjustment.
A.J. Hinch got the usual stupid question about, are you going to bench him? Are you going to drop him in the lineup? Never mind that the whole structure of this club is George Springer batting first. A.J. comes in and bats Springer first, Altuve third, Correa fourth. That's what the Astros are made of. And he said, I have my players back. They're going to know I have their backs. And that's part of building a relationship and trust that takes you through the tough times.
Well, we're talking here about George Springer III. Let's bring in George Springer Jr., George's dad. George, what is it like watching your son perform like that on the World Series stage?
It's overwhelming. The MVP is terrific. What it signifies to me is obviously he made a significant contribution while he was here during the World Series. But the most important thing is the team won. And I don't want to let that overshadow anything. And George has always been the kind of person not to genuflect accolades on himself. He's really all about the team and wanting to do what's best for the team. So I'm sure if you were to ask him the same question, he would say that to you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Springer, for joining us. And actually, the younger George Springer talked about playing in the backyard with his dad. George was actually the first recipient of the newly named Willie Mays World Series MVP Award, and he talked about what that means to him.
I used to go in the backyard with my dad and you know he would hit me fly balls and I'd pretend to be him. You know, I would pretend to be Willie Mays, and to earn this is great. You know, it's an honor, but it's not about me. It's about the team and what the team has done tonight, and I'm extremely happy for the team. And then also the jams today, I can say we're on point. I went with my 80s playlist. I got the boys right, obviously. And then once Correa got a hold of it, it ended up being like Bad Bunny and stuff. I don't know if you guys know who Bad Bunny is, but I don't know who Bad Bunny is. But I do now. And it was a loose clubhouse. I'm sure he could tell you. It was a lot of fun for us today.
So, Richard, the Astros got huge offense early off Yu Darvish. And, I mean, you look back, Dodgers got four scoreless innings from Clayton Kershaw. They get another three scoreless innings from Kenley Jansen, from Alex Wood. If you know that going into Game 7, you think they're in a pretty good spot. But, you know, of course, Yu Darvish really labored there early.
Yeah, and, you know, when they acquired Yu Darvish, you thought, okay, this is the missing piece, that they're going to have a big right-hander, a dominant right-hander to put between the two left-handers, and to put between the multitude of left-handers, yeah. And he just didn't get it done. You know, you're judged by how you do, and he didn't get it. He had two tough World Series starts, and really Clayton Kershaw bailed them out with four innings and Kenley and everybody else, but it's hard to win when you do it that way. You know, from the beginning of this World Series, you thought, okay, I can see the Astros have an advantage in rotation, the Astros have an advantage in lineup, but how are you going to get those last outs? And it turned out to be a little bit of a push here in game seven.
So let's ask the question that Dodgers fans are asking right now. Should Clayton Kershaw have started this game?
No, he was on 2 days rest. You just can't do that. You know, you have a certain way. And really, I think they had confidence in Yu Darvish. You know, as you know, when he's at his best, he's a dominant pitcher, but he just didn't have it. He picked a bad week to have a bad week. Yeah. And as every great performer knows, you are judged by how you handle the biggest stage.
Yeah, he did not have command of anything. I know there's a lot of talk about the slider in particular, but really all his pitches in his two starts, he got a total of 10 outs. He got a total of just two swings and misses in those two starts.
And the Astros, you know, said the Dodgers changed his repertoire. They took away the off-speed stuff, and he became a fastball, slider, power pitcher, breaks bats, buckles knees, all that. But if you're not sharp, you're not sharp. And I don't think it would have mattered. I don't think he could have gone back to the curve or the split finger or anything. He just had a bad night. And the one thing I've always noticed about him is if he faces some adversity early, and this is probably true of a lot of pitchers, is that he seems to get down on himself, become timid in the strike zone and all of that.
And you got to feel for Clayton Kershaw, still chasing that elusive World Series ring. He comes in, he pitches brilliantly, but too late. They were already in a huge hole by that point. And, you know, for better or worse, that postseason narrative is going to continue to dog him, you know, the next time he gets his next October opportunity. But you have to remember, he was brilliant here in Game 7.
Yeah, and Game 5, that's going to haunt him. You give him a four-run lead with Clayton Kershaw, the best pitcher of his generation, a pitcher who already has Hall of Fame statistics, is going to the Hall of Fame. That's a slam dunk. It's not even a question. But, you know, he wants to complete this line on his resume, and he's been unable to do that.
A theme in this World Series, Richard, was just A.J. Hinch called it that race to 27 outs. It was sometimes an arduous race from the Astros' perspective. It really pieced it together well in Game 7. You know, he didn't get as much length as he would have hoped out of Lance McCullers, but, you know, Charlie Morton really steps up in a four-inning relief role, similar to Lance McCullers in Game 7 of the ALCS. So that was the big key.
Yeah, and I thought the start by Lance McCullers was going to be disastrous. He just lost all command of the strike zone, hit four guys. And then you're thinking, okay, now 27 outs is going to be 20 outs. How do we get those? And he got one out of Davinsky. He uses Liriano for only the second time in the World Series.
Right.
But really, Charlie Morton came in and saved their butts. And, you know, he was a guy that when he became a free agent last year, he asked his agent, you think anybody will want me? And when the Astros signed him, they said he might be our best starter before this year's over. He's got killer stuff. They thought they could refine his pitch selection, emphasize that curveball, and he was great. And I can't even imagine what this night means for Charlie Morton's life and his career, because he was a guy that couldn't even dream of something like this. And to go and lock down in World Series Game 7, that's as cool as it gets. That's a moment he's going to remember for the rest of his life.
Let's hear from Charlie Morton on what it was like to finish off the World Series.
The guys came out and put runs on the board, and we held down a really tough lineup. And, you know, I don't know, it hasn't really sunk in, but I don't know, I felt pretty good. I thought early on I was just kind of amped up. I was overthrown a little bit, but settled in a little bit and started making some pitches.
And not to be lost in the shuffle with Brad Peacock as well. You know, he stepped up in relief of Lance McCullers, came on in the third inning, took it through the fourth without allowing a base runner. And, you know, think back to his performance in Game 3 was absolutely instrumental in the Astros getting this World Series championship.
Yeah, 139 pitches in Games 1, 3, 5, and 7. He was the guy that saved their butts during the season when they had four starters on the disabled list. He was good out of the bullpen. He was good in the rotation. And he came in, and I guarantee you that A.J. Hinch had more confidence in him than probably anybody else out there in the bullpen, because he's consistent in the strike zone. He throws 94. and a minor leaguer named Jordan Jankowski at the All-Star break in 2016 said, hey, I hold my slider this way. Why don't you try it? Change the guy's career. He was a guy that didn't think he was going to make the team, probably wouldn't have made the team if he wasn't out of options. I just saw his dad over there, and his dad said, I may write a book about this. And it is one of those things. And that's how you win a World Series. Your stars have to be stars, but you have to get production and contributions from people you didn't know you were going to get it from.
You're not supposed to win the World Series when you kind of lose trust in your bullpen.
Right. That's a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the way A.J. Hinch pieced this together, not just in Game 7, but the World Series in general. Obviously, had to go to starters multiple times to nail things down, but he found a way.
6 weeks ago, if we'd had this conversation, we'd say, okay, the Dodgers have a big problem in their bullpen. The Astros have it locked down, right, going backwards with Giles and Harris and Musgrove and Davinsky. Really dominant guys. Davinsky, the best in the majors at pitching the left-handed hitters, and they all seem to just hit a wall at the same time. And really, to win a World Series when you have no faith in your guys, that's pretty amazing.
So basically, Richard, the big hit proved elusive for L.A. in Game 7. They go 1-for-13 with runners in scoring position. They strand 10 guys. You know, this offense, it was such a deep lineup, but just didn't come through when it counted most.
Yeah, and they had traffic all night. They really, literally needed one hit. And you think, and what I'm sure what Dave Roberts is thinking, one hit would have loosened up everything and got everybody going, feeling more, a little bit more of a comfort zone. As it was, you know, Charlie Morton made a string of great pitches to them. And McCullers battled, but he just didn't have it. But they were able to string something together. It's a pretty masterful job by A.J. Hinch. But the Dodgers are going to remember they had a lot of opportunities and couldn't capitalize.
Really, the series really shifted with the move back to L.A. from an offensive perspective, just because it got a little home run derby-esque there in Houston, and even going back to Game 2 in L.A. in the warm conditions. But, you know, everything changed when we got back to L.A.
Yeah, it was a weird series in that the games 2 and 5 were so odd, like games you'll never see again, with each side punching and counter-punching. Tonight, Game 7 felt like a normal game, that one side, you know, the Dodgers had a couple of misplays early. The Astros got nothing out of their starting pitcher, but they were able to piece it together. And it was kind of a more traditional game, even with a start that wasn't all that traditional.
So the last three World Series champions, Richard, the Royals, the Cubs, the Astros, all those teams absolutely blew it up, torched it,
yeah,
built from the ground up. You know, there's big acquisitions that come along when the team is ready, but it just goes to show player development is where it's at if you're going to build a World Series champion.
A Houston businessman named Jim Crane bought the team in the late 2011, and he said, I'm going to hire a general manager great in the draft. That turned out to be Jeff Luhnow, and I'm going to give him the freedom and the resources to blow it up. And I remember telling Jim Leland the story, and Jim just rolled his eyes and goes, I've heard that 100 times. They're going to lose 20 out of 25, and he's going to go out and sign some old guys because competitive people can't deal with it. They stayed the course. They lost 100 games 3 years in a row, two under this regime, and it was a tough climb back to watch Altuve and Springer, to watch them grow, to draft Correa, to draft McCullers. But it is painful to have the discipline to stay the course. And, you know, and for an owner to say, okay, I'm convinced we have the right people in place, because you're not seeing results.
And it's a special thing when you look up the middle and see, you know, Altuve and Correa and Springer. They all come through the system together, basically. They all experience the highs and lows together. You develop a mentality. I mean, all those teams we just mentioned are different in their own way. They all have their own personality, the Cubs of 2016, the Royals of 2015. But that is kind of the common thread, is they had a system. They had a way of doing things. They had a clubhouse that really gelled. And then when you get in those tough moments, you're facing two game sevens in the Astros case, you're able to overcome it.
Yeah, and I think those are things you can't know. You can't know the heart of a Jose Altuve, the competitive fire of a guy like that. The fact that George Springer wants the game on his shoulders, he feels that. Carlos Correa is 23 years old. When he was called to the big leagues early in 2015, that sort of completed it. Okay, we have the cornerstones in place. Later, we would find out Alex Bregman, a year out of LSU, was a cornerstone as well. But they all mattered, you know. And when they had a 20-game, 15-game lead in the AOS, we would ask A.J. Hinch, so your guys are going to coast down. He said, just watch us play. Our guys show up to play. And that's what's carried them through. When they're down by three, they don't think they're going to lose. When they're up by five, they think they got to keep going at it.
It's a copycat industry.
Sure.
And it's not hard to look at the standings and see some teams trying to follow this very formula of building from the ground up.
Yeah, but you have to draft smartly.
Yeah.
And you have to have courage or convictions. Remember that A.J. Hinch was not the first manager Jeff Luhnow hired. And sometimes it takes a while to get it right. And that's the key part. Do I have the right people in place?
Well, the Astros clearly had the right people in place, and they win an absolutely epic World Series, Richard. It goes the distance, as it should have. I think we all were, at a certain point, rooting for it to go the distance just because this series seemed to deserve it. You had two of the greatest non-elimination games in World Series history, games 2 and 5. You know, game-tying and go-ahead home runs galore. Just crazy moments left and right, and it was just, it was exhausting, it was exhilarating, it was everything.
Yeah, and because of those games, Game 7 had a tension that maybe it didn't deserve because you thought something crazy is about to happen, because that's what's happened in this World Series.
Yeah, and Game 7 was probably on its own maybe the least compelling game of the seven games played, but of course anytime a team clinches it, that's compelling in its own right. But what are you going to remember from this World Series?
I'm going to remember the coming of age of George Springer and Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, that the whole country, these guys in Houston, we've seen for a while that Alex Bregman is a big-time player, a cool player, a good defensive player, and that they play with a certain energy. To me, you can't watch this team without being caught up in the fact that the manager's brilliant, that the players like each other, that they feed off each other, and that there's a certain joy with the way they go about this business.
Now, for me, my biggest moment or takeaway was Marwin Gonzalez off Kenley Jansen in Game 2. Ties it up in the ninth, a moment you never could have seen coming. Just give it. Gonzalez was really fighting it at that point, at the plate, and Jansen is Jansen. And when he tied that game, you think about what a difference that made in the series if Houston goes back home 0-2 versus, 1-1. It could be a totally different World Series. And, both of these cities obviously wanted this so bad. Dodgers, it had been 29 years since they get to the stage. Astros only gotten the stage once before and got swept by the White Sox in 2005. So you knew it was going to hurt one way or another for whoever walked away.
Yeah, and I think it really means a lot for the city of Houston, not just because of the hurricane, but because Houston was the city watched others hoist the trophies. Yeah. Houston was the city that the Oilers couldn't hold a 32-point lead in Buffalo in the playoffs. Yeah. Houston was the city the football team up and left. You know, it's always the city that couldn't get it done. In 98, when they had a great team and acquired Randy Johnson, it didn't get done. And to get over the top, it's going to take – people are so happy. It's beyond words. But it's going to take some time to get their mind around it. Like, are they going to come and still take this away from us? Because that's what they always do. They always come and get our trophy and give it to somebody else. That's going to be different.
And we talked about it before. I mean, this team really rallied around that idea of meaning something to the people of Houston.
Oh, it was a completely different. You know, Anthony, to see those guys show up at the George R. Brown Convention Center where 10,000 misplaced people were, where there were lines of people at a table labeled missing persons, to see them go down, roll up their sleeves, and they asked to roll up their sleeves and go to work and help, just play with kids and distribute groceries and all those things. Everything changed then. Now, Verlander came, Correa came, McCullers came back. A lot of things happened. But the emotion in that ballpark for a couple of hours each day, this team entertains us and distracts us and becomes something for our city to rally around. The mayor said, you guys are going to be the starting point for reconstruction of this city. And I don't care what anybody says. It didn't drain any flood water. It didn't clean up any debris. But it did matter in the hearts and minds of people.
Well, for my money, Richard, it was certainly one of the greatest World Series of all time. And I have to say, I think it was one of the greatest World Series podcasts of all time. You and me getting this done day after day.
Well, we talk about Altuve, Springer, Charlie Morton. I mean, you're Charlie Morton. Let's face it. You bring it. I mean, that curveball you have, you're very good. And I like to think of myself as the George Springer of this podcast.
I like to think that, too. I like Charlie Morton.
I like to think of myself like that. I'm not sure anybody else does.
Well, like Charlie Morton, I'm going to close it out. I want to thank you, Richard, for doing this game after game. And thank everybody for tuning in. And stay with us. We'll be back on Friday to recap the 2017 postseason. Until then, thanks for tuning in.